everybody. My name is Olena Gomonaya, and I will be your chairman for next four talks. So we start from the talk given by Daihiro Hirobe, who will speak about spin Seebeck effect in one-dimensional spin liquids. Please, 30 minutes plus 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you for the introduction. And to be honest, my first name is Daichi, not Dai. But anyway, for international researchers, my names are degenerate. So, okay. Today I'll be talking about this topic on behalf of Professor Saito. In fact, this talk is based on my grad student, and today's talk will be based on two papers published in Nature Physics as well as in the PLL. Here are a number of wonderful collaborators for the studies as well as my advisors when I was a grad student. I received high-quality single crystals from Koike and Masuda research groups while asking Professor Maekawa and Associate Professor Sato for theoretical calculations. As a simple experiment, I'm glad that Dr. Sato has attended this meeting and that he seems to be ready to protect me against theoretical questions. Okay. Here is the outline of today's talk. In the introduction, I'll explain several important aspects of the spin Seebeck effect as our probe into quantum spin systems. Then I'll move on to the main part. In the first half, I'll pick up Tomonaga Lattice liquid as a typical example of quantum spin liquid and explain that its elementary excitations called spinons can carry spin currents. In the second half, I'll move on to a variant of Tomonaga Lattice liquid called a spin nematic Tomonaga Lattice liquid. In this state, spin 2 excitations, not spin 1, govern lower energy phenomena. And these so-called magnum, and I'll explain how these so-called magnum pairs can be detected in the spin Seebeck effect. Finally, I'll summarize these two things. So a typical way of characterizing our low-lying spin excitations is measuring the magnetic thermal conductivity. This is based on the fact that they can carry entropy. On the other hand, they may be able to carry one other quantity and its spin angular momentum. This suggests that maybe our exotic spin excitations are characterized as spin current carriers. In today's talk, I want to persuade you that spin Seebeck effects are helpful for characterizing spin excitations from this aspect. Here, the spin Seebeck effect refers to the thermal generation of spin currents. What you see here is a typical experimental setup for the spin Seebeck effect. The sample consists of a magnet and a metal. By applying a heat current in the magnet, you drive a spin current along the heat current, and this results in a non-equilibrium spin accumulation at the interface. Finally, this spin accumulation diffuses into the adjacent metal, where the injected spin current is converted into a transverse voltage drop as by the inverse spin Hall effect. So to some extent, the spin Seebeck effect is an interface effect. This is because spin currents cannot be conserved. So to characterize spin currents, you need to convert spin currents into electric voltages via the interface in the spin Seebeck effect. So spin Seebeck effects have several advantages when they are applied to quantum spin systems. One of them is that the spin Seebeck effect can be applied to motor insulators without conduction electrons. In fact, magnons and ferromagnets, as well as antiferromagnets, have been found to carry spin currents. So my question is, can quasi particles in quantum systems convey spin currents without typical magnetic orders? And we believe that we were the first to investigate spin Seebeck effects from this aspect And I want to demonstrate that they can carry spin currents, or they can be detected in this spin current phenomena by taking one-dimensional spin lickets as typical examples. Okay, let's move on to the first half, spin-on-spin currents in a Tominaga-Luttinger licket. There was a nice introduction to a Tominaga-Luttinger licket and its elementary excitations called spin-ons yesterday, so I won't get into the details. The point is, a Tominaga-Luttinger licket exhibits a long-range single-rate correlation, and gapless excitations from this and the correlated ground state are called spin-ons. Because spin-ons carry spin 1/2, they need to be created or annihilated pairwise to change spin angular momentum in units of h-bar. So partly motivated by these two properties, we took Tominaga-Luttinger licket as the starting point. A model material of Tominaga-Luttinger licket is a model insulator strontium to copper oxygen 3. What you see here is a quantum spin chain embedded in this material. The super exchange coupling by the oxygen ions is about 2000 Kelvin. Not only structure, but also magnetic and thermal properties have been found to be consistent with a one-dimensional Tominaga-Luttinger licket picture. For example, neutron scattering experiments demonstrated a continuous energy spectrum unique to the pair creation of spin-ons. In addition, several researchers have reported that this material exhibits an anisotropic magnetic thermal conductivity along quantum spin chains. We used single crystals of this material received from Koike research group at Tohoku University. And here is what the experimental setup looks like. The sample consists of strontium to copper oxygen 3 and platinum. I applied a heat current along the quantum spin chain to try driving a spin Seebeck effect. If a spin Seebeck effect arises under this condition, the spin current finally diffuses into the adjacent platinum, where a transverse voltage drop arises thanks to the inverse spin Hall effect. I investigated phase and temperature dependencies of voltages in the platinum. So let me start with a result without strontium to copper oxygen 3. What you see here is the field dependence of voltage signal at several temperatures. The voltage is a small voltage appears, and it is proportional to the magnetic field. This is not relevant to the substrate, MgO. It is due to a thermoelectric effect of platinum itself called the normal Nernst effect. I plotted the slope of these lines, or the normal Nernst effect coefficient, in the right panel as a function of temperature. It is always positive. So this is the point. It is always positive. So let me move on to a result with strontium to copper oxygen 3. Around room temperature, the small positive signal appears. However, while decreasing temperature, the voltage vanishes at about 200 Kelvin and turns into a negative signal. And this negative component continues down to low temperatures. So this result shows that a negative component appears only with the Tominaga-Luttinger liquid material strontium to copper oxygen 3. This negative component can be attributed to spin current injection as follows. I repressed the platinum with tungsten and conducted the same experiment. In general, tungsten and platinum convert spin currents into opposite voltages by the inverse spin Hall effect, so comparison between them is a common way of confirming spin current origin. The red data points are for tungsten. The voltage doesn't exhibit a sine reversal, and more importantly, it exhibits a positive peak at low temperatures. This contrasts markedly with a negative peak observed with platinum. This polarization clearly shows that the negative voltage for the platinum is due to spin current injection from strontium tin to copper oxygen 3 due to the spin Seebeck effect. Some of you may be wondering where the signature of a spinon is. Well, again, the sign of the voltage is a key point. One-dimensional terminal latent liquid exhibits a negative voltage for positive field in the present experimental setup. In the same definition of voltage, magnetons in ferrimagnets and antiferrimagnets exhibit positive voltages for positive fields. Since the sign of the inverse Bernoulli effect is determined by the spin polarization direction carried by a spin current, this opposite sign suggests that spinons carry the opposite spin polarization to that of classical spin waves. As you see in a few minutes, this expectation is indeed reproduced by a theoretical calculation based on the dynamical spin susceptibility. At a qualitative level, the opposite sign may be understood in the following way. In a one-dimensional terminal latent liquid, there is a strong singular correlation. Thus, spinons are created in such a way that the magnetization along the external field increases. In contrast, since ferromagnetic magnets need to be created from the fully polarized state, they must decrease the magnetization along the external field. So considering the different correlations, you may expect the opposite spin polarization between them. So here is a list of properties to be reproduced in the calculation. One, injected spin current or a measured voltage is proportional to the external field. And two, the opposite spin polarization to that of ferromagnets and antiferromagnets. Due to the limited time, I focus on ferromagnets in the following. Here is the setup used for theoretical modeling. We assume that quantum spin chains and the metals have different effective temperatures, and the difference between them represents a non-equilibrium due to heat current. We also make our assumption that our localized spins in the magnet and the conduction electrons in the metal are coupled weakly by the SD type interface exchange coupling. By calculating our tunneling spin current perturbatively with respect to the weak interface exchange coupling, you arrive at this general formula. It consists of three parts, namely, the dynamical spin susceptibilities for the metal and the quantum spin chain, as well as the temperature factor. By substituting a spin diffusion type for the dynamical spin susceptibility of the metal, you finally arrive at this expression, where the imaginary part of the dynamical spin susceptibility determines the sign of spin currents. Because the great weight of the dynamical spin susceptibility is located on the energy dispersion, you need to be careful to calculate the energy dispersion under magnetic field. Thankfully enough, a long time ago, almost accurate and analytical energy dispersion under field was derived. What you see here is the energy dispersion around the Brillouin zone edge. By increasing magnetic field, you can create the asymmetry between the positive and the negative energy lesions. In general, the imaginary part of the dynamical spin susceptibility corresponds to the density of states of magnetic spin excitations, for up spin excitation in the positive energy region and the down spin excitation in the negative energy region. So this means that the asymmetry are appearing here the asymmetry appearing here corresponds to the imbalance between up spin and down spin excitations. So spin on spin currents result from this imbalance. So let's see what happens. All right. These blue data points are calculated results. Clearly, the injector spin current is proportional to the external field, which is consistent with the experimental observation. We also calculated injected spin current based on the three-dimensional ferromagnetic magnetrons. And these data are plotted as lead data points in the left panel. Clearly, one-dimensional spinorons and the ferromagnetic magnetrons exhibit the absent spin polarization to each other. Overall, the agreement between experimental and theoretical results shows that the field linearity and the absent spin polarization can be reproduced by competition between up spin and down spin excitations, and essentially are the singlet and different correlations in the ground state. Okay, let's move on to the second half, magnon pairs and their spin nematic tomalanolactone gel liquid. As I explained, the spin current injection in the spin Zivek effect is mediated parabatically by the interface exchange coupling. This means that spin 1 exchange between the magnon in the magnet and the conduction electron in the metal is responsible for the spin current injection. So what if somehow these two magnons get bound to form a magnon pair carrying spin 2, not spin 1? Because the annihilation of such a magnon pair will require two conduction electrons to flip their spins, this will correspond to a higher order perturbation in the calculation and thus decrease spin currents. In the very recent PRL paper, we demonstrated that this is the case and found that the correlation of magnon pairs can be captured as the suppression of their spin Zivek effect. So to have a better understanding of magnon pairs, we need to start with our spin nematic order. So for more information, please visit a poster given by Dr. Sato, where the spin nematic order is the simplest example of multipolar order. And its order parameter is defined by the product of two spins as shown here. If we identify these our spin operators as the creation or annihilation operators of a single magnon, you can say that the spin nematic order parameter is corresponds to the creation or annihilation of spin 2 excitations. Let's call these spin 2 excitations magnon pairs hereafter. So in this picture, the spin nematic ordered state is characterized as BEC of two magnon bound states, as written here. A typical magnon pair or spin nematic correlation appears in a frustrated J1, J2 spin chain motor. In this model, spins 1/2 are coupled to each other by the ferromagnetic nearest exchange coupling and the antiferromagnetic next nearest exchange coupling. What you see here is a phase diagram of this model as a function of external field at 0 Kelvin. So while increasing external field, Magnum pairs appear as gap press excitations as described here, while single magnons acquire energy gap equivalent to the binding energy of magnum pairs. A model material of the spin chain model is lithium copper vanadium oxygen 4. The magnitude of J1 and J2 was estimated to be about 40 to 70 kelvins. Because of weak interchain exchange coupling, this material exhibits a magnetic phase transition at about 3 kelvin. But please recognize that this temperature is well below the magnitude of J1 and J2. In general, differentiating spin 2 excitations from spin 1 excitations is difficult, NMR and neutron scattering, only dynamical quantities used in NMR and neutron scattering experiments capture the signatures of spin nematic correlation in this material. I received a single crystal of lithium carbon vanadium oxygen 4 from Master Research Group at the University of Tokyo. I characterized the magnetic properties by measuring the magnetization as a function of magnetic field and temperature. And what you see here is the I plotted my data points on the BD phase diagram reported elsewhere. My colored data points nicely fit on the phase boundary between a spiral and their paramagneto-like phases. So the magnetic properties of our samples are consistent with those reported elsewhere. With these single crystals, I carried out the spin-Seebeck effect measurements. Basically, the setup is the same as the one I explained a few minutes ago. I applied a heat current along the quantum spin chain and try to investigate the spin-Seebeck effect in this material. So at about 50 Kelvin, a small voltage signal appears, and it is simply proportional to the external field. This can be explained simply by the normal Nernst effect of platinum itself. Lithium copper vanadium oxygen 4 is not relevant here. By decreasing temperature, however, you're going to get a clear voltage signal. And very, very importantly, the field dependence deviates from a linear line and decreases while increasing the magnetic field. This deviation grows while decreasing temperature. To look into this deviation, I compare field dependencies between voltage and the magnetization in the right panel. Despite a few linear change in the magnetization, the voltage signal gets suppressed strongly. And please recognize that this cannot be explained simply by the Zeeman energy gap, although seemingly similar results were reported for ferrite magnets and paramagnets. In these previous cases, the suppression of spin-Seebeck effects always accompanies the saturation of the magnetization. That's why these results were attributed to the Zeeman energy gap. In contrast, in lithium copper vanadium oxygen 4, the magnetization exhibits a smooth linear line, and the magnetization is only about 0.1 mu b per copper ion, even at 9 tesla at 4 Kelvin. So our results indicates the formation of spin excitations that are gapless but cannot contribute to the spin-Seebeck effect. Again, I asked Dr. Sato to develop theoretical explanations, and his And a basic idea is to consider a single Magnon energy gap due to the Magnon pair formation. We start with the same general formula for the injector spin current. And we approximate our energy dispersion by a relativistic one with our energy gap. In our PR paper published in 2013, Dr. Sauter already demonstrated that this energy gap equivalent to the binding energy of Magnon pairs can be calculated without fitting parameters. And the binding energy, in this panel, I showed few dependencies of the binding energy as well as their magnetization. The binding energy is almost linear with respect to the external field alongside the magnetization. Here, with this linearity of the binding energy, we calculated our spin current injected into our platinum. So by increasing external field from zero, you can get a finite spin current. This is simply due to our increase in Magnon's lifetime in a low field length by the application of external field. And very, very importantly, theoretical calculation exhibits a broad peak which is consistent with our observation. To be short, spin 1 magnons, or to be accurate, paramagnons cannot contribute to the spin Seebeck effect at high fields because of the energy gap of Magnon pair origin. In addition, spin 2 Magnon pairs cannot contribute to the spin Seebeck effect either because they correspond to higher order perturbation. Overall, the agreement between experimental and theoretical results suggest that the spin Seebeck effect can selectively detect spin excitations by the interface. And thanks to this property, spin Seebeck effects can be used to probe our spin 2 excitations called Magnon pairs in a spin nematic terminal actin gel liquid. Okay, let me summarize. With our terminal latin gel liquid, you can create spin-on-spin currents along with quantum spin chains in the motor insulator, strontium 2, copper, oxygen 3. And with our spin-nematic terminal latin gel liquid, thanks to the selective extraction of spin 1 excitations in the spin Seebeck effect at the interface, you can probe our Magnon pairs in spin nematic terminal latin gel liquid material in the motor material. And again, our associate professor gives a poster presentation on this topic, so if you have an interest in it, please come to see it. And here is the take-home message that I want you to remember. Spin Seebeck effect serves as a probe into exotic excitations of spin liquids or quantum spin systems in a broader context. We believe that in our studies, spintronics is meeting quantum materials and they're presenting frontiers to be explored. And last but not least, I'm sorry for the absence of topology in my study. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you for a nice talk and perfect timing. So now, questions. Yaroslav, you do your homework very well.
I was asked to ask a question. So I have a good question, actually. I'm actually, well, it's a comment. I wonder what you think about it. I'm skeptical about your argument that the sign of the Spin-Zabek effect, this negative sign, whatever, opposite to the ferromagnetic sign, is some kind of indication of spin liquid physics. If you look at anti-ferromagnetic case, despite those all the data that you were showing, the natural sign that you expect is actually opposite to the theoretically. Is opposite to the ferromagnetic case if you align magnetic nail order with the magnetic field. If the nail order is aligned with the magnetic field, the way you're shifting the bands by the magnetic field, you expect the opposite sign. And there's actually new data from UC Riverside group, Jinchi, that's consistent with that. And it's, you know, so basically, for a simple nail anti-ferromagnet, the natural sign before spin flop transition, things like that, the natural sign is like for spin liquid. So the sign itself doesn't really matter much. That's kind of my point. What do you think about it?
I didn't for the data and for the and the narrow order state.
May I comment? So, in my view, these anti-ferromagnetic magnons are very similar to spinons from the symmetry point of view. That is why they.
Oh, you could say from. Of course, it's a very. The whole point is that nail anti-ferromagnets are very, very different than spin liquids. That's, of course, true. But that's not reflected in general in the sign of spins up. So maybe one has to be a little bit more cautious making the statements on the sign.
Yeah, please.
That's good. Yeah, I have several experimental questions. A very simple one for the spin chain compound in the first part. Did you also try to? Yeah, for the first part, did you also try to measure the Spin-Zabek effect for a rotated sample? So with the spin chains perpendicular to the current.
Aha.
Did you do that?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
And
This one.
Okay, so, so in your experiment, you direct the heat current parallel to the spin chains. Is that correct, right?
Yes.
And did you also do an experiment perpendicular with the spin chains perpendicular to the current? And what do you find then? Ah, it's there. Ah, I see.
This one. I also measure the Spin-Zabek effect by applying the heat current perpendicular to the spin chain, and we found there are strong separation for the platinum as well as the tungsten. So we believe that there are like the magnetic thermal conductivity, and there is the anisotropic spin current transport in this material as well.
Yeah. If I may, I would like to continue with experimental questions. So the temperature gradient that you measured, where did you measure that? At which between which points?
I measured temperatures at the top of the platinum and the bottom of the strontium to copper works.
Okay, so if I now play devil's advocate, and you mentioned yourself that you measure also, you pick up Nernst signals in your of the platinum itself. And if you now think about the heat conductivity of the material, which is also very anisotropic and very, very large at low temperature, you would naturally get a different temperature gradient on the platinum depending on the heat conductivity of the material that you actually have in your sandwich. Did you try to take the heat conductivity of the material into account to get rid of spurious Nernst effects which arise due to this temperature gradients?
Yes, strontium, I think this material, strontium copper oxygen 3, exhibits which direction? Isotropic or heat conduction along B and C directions. So in this data, the thermal gradient is the same between the experimental setups.
Yes, but what I'm saying is when you measure the temperature gradient between your heat source and your heat sink. And you have in between a sandwich where one part has a very temperature dependent heat conductivity, then this will definitely affect the temperature drop also in your platinum layer. And if you measure there also Nernst effects, then these Nernst effects will scale depending on these temperature gradients which you have there. This means the heat conductivity of the sample itself plays an important role. And the question is whether you took this into account.
I didn't take into account that effect in this analysis.
Okay, thank you.
More questions?
Yeah, so President, my question is pretty naive, but my understanding in conventional Seebeck effect, which is usually thermoelectricity, what is important is particle hole asymmetry, right? So if you have just particle symmetric spectrum, there is no thermal power. Now, so it didn't speak much about the theory, but still, so in Tamanaga Luttinger liquid, in conventional representation, spectrum is linear, so your plyometric field, there is no particle symmetry, asymmetry anyway. So my first question is, what are you talking about? Is it Tamanaga Luttinger or it's something else?
So to be honest, if you apply a conventional linearized Tamanaga Luttinger liquid, you get always zero spin current.
Okay, great, yeah. So you're talking about not Tamanaga Luttinger, but just some other calculation that accounts for the nonlinearity of the spectrum, right?
Yes.
Okay, and I guess that in your case, the nonlinearity is that the velocity goes the velocity goes down with momentum. So it's a concave spectrum. I'm not sure about concave or convex, but epsilon of k is k minus k cube, for example. K minus k cube, not plus, but minus. That's my point.
So basically,
in the nonlinear spectrum, we agree on that. And then my point is that basically what is, as far as I understand, the sign just depends on the whether you have prevalence of particles or holes. So I guess that if velocity goes down with momentum, then probably you'll get a negative Seebeck. But it, in my view, it doesn't tell anything about whether it's spinons or some other excitations. It doesn't tell you about the spinal excitation. It just tells you about the spectrum, whether velocity goes up or down with momentum. Is it true?
I don't have a good answer. Dr. Sato, can you help me?
The sign of the spin-Seebeck signal is determined by the competition between the positive omega and the negative omega region. So the kind of the quasi-particle is not important in principle.
Again?
Of the quasi-particle, spin or magnon are not important.
Okay, so it's not a manifestation of spinons, it's just a manifestation of the type of spectrum, right?
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
I have a question about your magnon pair. Magnum. Can you explain to me give me some picture how these two magnon put like a pair, or what's the force put them together? How to think about this?
So the point is now frustration are just induced by the ferromagnetic J ferromagnetic exchange coupling and anti ferromagnetic exchange coupling, and there how should I put it? So your question is why are attractive force arises from this frustration, or is this the answer to your question?
Or like how do I think about this magnon pair? What's the force to make this stable? Is there like some picture you can help me understand?
Pictures?
It's an excitation, so this to magnetic excitation, so it should not be stable.
But if they bond, indeed, there is a question what forces putting them together.
The question is whether they are coupled somehow or they can move independently. The space.
Two magnets move together in this picture.
And what the question was, which force keeps them moving together? Do you have some simple picture, or will you discuss by coffee?
I don't think it's a simple picture of putting on these two magnets together. We need to consider this attractive force based on the calculation.
Thank you. And last question from Yaroslav.
Just quickly following up on discussion just a minute ago that Leonid raised. So Leonid, I think if you make analogy here to ordinary Zebec effect, it's not so much about particle hole symmetry. It's more about electron quantum drag. So it's kind of like Zebec effect in semiconductors, and it's mostly happening at the interface. So it's some kind of electron magnon drag that's happening at the interface. So again, one has to be careful translating intuition from a kind of a fermilibric type of consideration.
So for linear spectrum, there will be an effect
or not? Even for linear spectrum, if you have magnetic field that breaks degeneracy between spin up and spin down, that means the heat flux will have some spin component to it. That's all you need.
What determines the direction?
Magnetic field.
No. But. It's kind of simple. So for ferromagnet, the magnetic field determines the direction of the order parameter. And then spin is opposite to the order parameter. Well, the magnets carry angular momentum opposite to the angular momentum of the order parameter. That's why ferromagnet is special. That's why in a ferromagnet, the sign is kind of, I would say ferromagnet is the unusual sign. Everything else, the sign should be kind of generically or naturally opposite to the ferromagnet. Basically, magnetic field, so long as your system essentially is paramagnetic, so that the magnetic field creates excess of spin, whatever, as in a paramagnet, then the heat flux will carry angular momentum according to this kind of paramagnetic character. That's what determines the sign. And that's an inelastic process at the interface that eventually translates into a Nernst effect, which is what is measured.
Okay, but what was your question?
No, it's a follow-up to the discussion.
Okay, this was a comment. Okay, then any, okay. Last question, very short one.
I have a question concerning the comparison with calculations, of calculations with your experimental results, where you mentioned that the dynamic spin susceptibility is the decisive quantity which enters there. Mm-hmm. Now, for this change, this susceptibility is very, very small. So my question is now whether the quantity that is calculated matches that what you measure. Is it quantitatively in agreement?
To be honest, the magnitude of spin currents is not reliable. All right. So in this calculation, we can only consider the sign of spin currents, not the magnitude of spin currents.
Okay, so this was the last question, and let's thank speaker again.